This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, here we are. It's 4:06 and 97 degrees, Mike.
Hey, well, I like the 4:06 part. I don't like the 96 or 97 or whatever
last,
it is out there.
What, you know, last gasp effort for the summer.
Yeah, well, it can go into fall anytime it wants. cool weather, breezy, and lots of rain.
It is pretty warm out.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Us outdoor types like being inside every once in a while, so our brain will quit sizzling.
We got to have some kind of dehydration.
Yeah, dehydration. That's what I want, dehydration. Well, if you're out there listening to this great conversation, thank you. But this is a lawn and garden show, and I speak about things that are happening that are germane to our area kind of in the present tense, and sometimes I talk about other things. But, you know, things are happening. It's hot, it's dry, and leaves are starting to fall. And if you have any questions, you can call 673-4464. And it doesn't matter what I'm speaking about at the current time that you're wanting to call. I'll just break into my thought process and ask your question, and we'll hash it out on the radio here, and hopefully I will help you. So this is supposed to be an educational program, and I hope some folks are getting an education from it. I do, because of the research I have to do sometimes to put this show together. And I do know a lot, but I sure don't know everything. And I learn stuff every single day. It's amazing what you can learn in the agricultural outdoor world. And at any rate, this is an early fall. I mean, look around. Leaves are falling all over the place. You know, and things are turning red. Some trees are turning red. Some are turning yellow, the leaves and all that. And, you know, it's only about a month earlier than normal. Usually this doesn't quite get into full swing of everything until, you know, mid-September, end of September. You know, we have a few cool nights and no frost, but cooler nights, you know, where it gets below 60 and you have to actually put a blanket on. Well, that's it's not quite there yet, but the leaf change and the leaf fall is not really normal for this time of year. I drive up my canyon every night with my dog. I run him. I got one of those Kubota 4x4s or whatever you want to call them. And we go up to Skid Road for, a quarter to half a mile. And it's amazing how many leaves have fallen on the road in the last week and a half to 2 weeks. It's just like, wow, what's going on here? And it's just way, way early. I've never seen it this early. And it's not because it's been cold, obviously. It's not because it's been raining, obviously. But it's happening because of drought. Leaves are falling all over the county because they're shutting down earlier than normal so that they can survive until next spring. They're smart enough to, you know, pull in their horns, if you will, and drop the leaves so they don't have to work at it and conserve their energy until conditions are better and they warrant growth, which would be probably, you know, end of February, 1st of March, and, you know, we would have sufficient moisture in the ground and more temperate temperatures. Now that's really a way to say it, but that's what they do. They pull in their horns and they say, hey, we're gonna sit this one out for a while. We don't need to do anything, and besides, there's no water to suck up into the root system and give it to the tree anyway. And lack of soil moisture is basically the culprit. In normal years with normal rain, which we haven't had a normal year in about 4 years, as far as rainfall is concerned, we haven't hit the average yet. And
I don't think we've even come close.
No,
have we?
No. Yeah. I mean, we were 10 inches down this year, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's been the worst of the last four or five. But at any rate, as that soil moisture drops and dissipates, you know, the roots are not, on a lot of trees, the roots are not down far enough to capture any moisture from the soil. So consequently, younger trees kind of bite the dust early simply because there's nothing there to translocate the nutrition from the ground up into the leaves and promote growth. That's the simplest way I can say it.
That's the cycle.
That's the cycle. And I'm speaking about native trees, basically, that are not irrigated. You know, trees that are part of a yard's landscaping are not losing their leaves at the same rate simply because there's some irrigation normally in a person's yard that they see the lawn is dry or the shrubs haven't been watered. They either flip the switch on the sprinkler system or drag the hose out and give everything a shot. And those trees, those shrubs are not dropping the leaves, are not turning their fall colors, whereas those, if you look on the hillsides, especially the maples and some of the others, they're turning yellow or they're turning red and dropping. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. And the yard guys, they've got it made. they're doing okay. They've got water. They've got a home, and they've been cared for, you know, for the past year in summer and a spring, and they're still slowing down. They're still kind of coming to the end of that growing season. And if you'll notice, the trees that are the natural trees that are along the rivers or the creeks or by a pond, they're not dropping leaves at the same rate either, because there is some moisture to be had when you're living along the riverbank or the creek bank, and they're beginning to show a little bit of fall color, but they're not dropping the leaves as those which are higher up on ridges or in places where there's less moisture. And, you know, usually fall is a prime planting time for trees and shrubs, because their main growth spurt is slowing down. And it's safe to plant in the fall because of dormancy that's about to set in. And since the ground is so dry and hard, planting this fall is going to need a little more care. I mean, you can still do it, and they're still, you know, they'll still survive if you treat everything correctly. And I know I probably said this 150,000 times in this show, but there's always somebody out there that wants to hear it again, I'm sure. But like what we do, like we finished up a landscaping job today, prior to planting the new trees or the shrubs, you know, what we do is we of course pre-soak the planting hole, fill it up with water. See how's it doing? Is it draining fast? Is it draining slow? That will give you some idea on what type of watering you need to do to that shrub or the tree once it's planted. If it drains like in 3 minutes, you'll say, okay, I got good drainage. If it doesn't drain in 15 minutes, you know, hey, there's something down there. Mm-hmm.
You got a problem.
Hard clay, right, or rock or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's when overwatering does occur, because if it's all covered up,
sure,
and the shrub or the tree is in there, and you're watering, say, holding a hose on it for, say, 5 minutes, you know, you might put 5 gallons of water in there or 3 gallons of water, and it's not draining anywhere, and consequently then the root rot begins,
right,
and then the tree dies, and you think, oh, my gosh, it needs more water, so you're pumping more water to it.
Defeating your purpose.
And the tree dies quicker,
yeah.
You know. So that's what you do in the fall, or any time you plant, but in the fall especially when it's this hot and dry. You know, test the ground, see what's happening. And what we do a lot of times, like when it's, 90 degrees and above or 85 and above, is while the tree or the shrub is still in the pot, we pre-water it so that if it's been sitting on the driveway or on the sidewalk for an hour or two, you know, the sun is heating up that, the pots are black, so it absorbs the heat, and so consequently the roots are absorbing that heat as well. But if you water them, it cools them off, and they they feel better, okay? And then when you slide them out of the pot and put them in the planting hole and cover it up with your good soil, then you soak them. There's less of a shock transition to the whole root system. And if you practice things like that, it's good. You know that the roots are wet. You know that the roots are cool prior to even putting it in the hole. And then you get it in the hole, and then you cover it and give it, say, a gallon of water or something like that, and it soaks right down into it because you use good planting soil, like I've preached about for 75 years here. And, you know, because it's being planted in wet soil. The sides of the hole are also wet because when you got a dry hole and you pour water into it, the water just doesn't go down. It also goes to the side horizontally, yeah, because it's like a sponge. It that dry ground absorbs the water. So that's a good thing. And as a good thing, that means that the roots that are on the side of the plant and the bottom of the plant are getting, you know, moisture equally, and that's a sign that, hey, it's going to make it. it's going to work. So once the tree is planted, you're going to water it again,
yeah,
like you did the first drench, and at this watering, that's when you add the B1, which is a vitamin, and it is a shock reducer and a root enhancer. In other words, it's a yucca extract, and there's a few other little goodies in there that are natural kind of super stuff. And those roots absorb that very quickly, and it takes away all the shock that might have occurred if you mishandled the plant or if you let it set out in the sun a little bit too long without any care. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take much on a 90-degree day to do some root damage. So this vitamin B1, it's called Start, usually in a blue bottle with a yellow label. You can buy it by the quart or the gallon, and I think they got a pint thing too, but you buy it by the gallon and you're getting a better deal. And the directions say 2 tablespoons per gallon of water, but I usually go about four glugs into a gallon of water.
Give it a little extra.
Yeah, I give it a little extra, and I've done this 10,000 times, and I've not seen it backfire or hurt the tree or the shrub. It's absorbed and goes to work immediately, and you're good to go, and you know that the shock reduction is at its optimum. And if you do that maybe once a week on a newly planted plant, it just takes right off and gets going very, very quickly. And it, like I say, it energizes the root system. It kind of kicks it into high gear. It's like when you're hungry and there's no good things to eat, and you can grab a Snickers bar and you eat that puppy, boy, you feel good. You're going for, you know, you're going for another hour. Well, that's what this B1 does. It just jacks them up, and then you go. And the B1's not a fertilizer. It's just the super vitamin. And it's for trees and shrubs, not people. Don't drink any of it. The taste is not good. I tried it. No, I didn't try it. But like I say, you follow the same procedure for the shrubs. Ground covers, petunias, marigolds, geraniums. You know, I call this survival insurance. And I know that it works because many, many years ago, in one of my first year in landscaping, actually, I was up at the old dump. Now it's called the landfill.
Landfill.
Yeah, landfill.
Sanitation.
Yeah, sanitation hole. But yeah. Anyway, back in those days, there was a cutout in the draw up there, and you backed up to this old log,
yeah,
and you just threw your stuff over the side, and there it was. Well, one day was like May. Late May was warm, you know, say 80-ish. And as I was throwing stuff over, I noticed that there were 3 bare root trees that somebody had thrown away laying on the top of the trash. And I thought, what idiot would throw away 3 perfectly good trees? I couldn't believe it. Well, back in those days, it wasn't against the law to walk down into the dump and retrieve what your treasures that you might want.
Help yourself
dump. And and so I went down there and I grabbed those 3 trees, and they were, gosh, they were 8 feet tall, you know, well branched, no leaves, not a leaf on them. But like I said, this was mid-May, maybe toward the end of May, I'm not sure. But the roots were bare. They were not in a pot. So I took them and put them in my truck and went home. And this was my first episode with vitamin B1. Dug a big hole and chopped up the soil and threw it in there. And I probably gave them 2 gallons of this B1. And really spruced it up, you know. Six tablespoons per gallon, or, you know, they're either going to explode out of the ground like a rocket ship,
or they're just gonna die
right now, man.
Heart attack.
And I put one in my yard and two in my mom's yard. And I watched, and nothing happened. And a couple of weeks went by and nothing happened. About the third week, and I was doing this about once a week, the third week, I looked and there was brand new buds all along the stems, and they were flowering cherries. They were beautiful trees, expensive trees. Why would anybody throw an expensive tree in the dump? But they weren't marred or you know, ugly or anything. They were good-looking trees. I see these buds coming. I went, that's good. Well, within a week, these buds started pushing little branchlets, little tiny branchlets, and there were leaves that were coming out. And my mom's were doing the same thing. And so I kept pumping the B1 to it. And by about the middle of July, in midsummer, you know, right around in there, these things had branched out beautifully.
Wow.
They had leaves all over them, and they were growing like gangbusters. And in the meantime, I quit using the B1 and started using liquid fertilizer on them to really pump them, you know. And those trees, I don't know if it's in my old house up on Leland Street, but it turned into a beautiful tree. It got about, before I moved out, it was probably, you know, 15 feet tall and about 15 feet wide, full of flowers in the spring. It was a Quanson flowering cherry, bright pink flowers, beautiful. And I thought, this B1 really works. And so I've used it ever since. I mean, you know, when I hear something out there in the landscaping or the nursery world, I go, that sounds interesting. I think I'll see if it works. And so I do the experiments. And I always overdo it just a little bit just to see.
Right.
And
see how much you can get away with.
Yeah, 99 times out of 100, it works.
It works. Speaking of working.
I know. I could sense it.
Yeah, we gotta pay some bills here.
Okay.
We'll be right back with Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show and you on the phone. 541-673-4464. There you go. I was going to give out my cell phone. That would not be good.
No, that'd be funny.
We'll be right back on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Absolutely, we are back. It is 4:26.
Well, I've been talking about the premature fall that we're having, and I've been talking about using vitamin B1 when you're planting, especially this time of year when it's so hot and not really comfortable for trees to be planted or shrubs, and it's not comfortable for people that are doing it too sometimes.
True.
But if you do it early in the morning or, you know, late in the evening before it gets too dark.
Do you want to take a phone call?
Do I want to? Yes, of course. That's
all
why
right.
I'm here.
Here we go. Hey, you're on the air with Mike Winters. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Thank
and
you.
A very lovely, warm day it is.
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Winters.
Yes.
I have a blood good Japanese maple.
Yes.
That started last year. off. And it has continued dying, even though I'm still feeding it water.
Mm-hmm.
What? And my neighbor up the street and down the street, each are losing theirs too. What is going? Is there something that we don't know about?
Well, it depends. Now, how often are you watering it?
Well, of course, in the winter, I don't water at all.
No, I mean the summer now.
Yeah, in the summer, yeah, I was given once a week.
Okay.
For 20 minutes, a drip system on it. But I kind of upped that because it was dying.
Mm-hmm.
And the ground is dry as can be. I live up on Rocky Ridge Drive off of that in Rose Village.
Uh-huh.
And everything's drying up, as we all know.
Yeah. Well, you know, with the heat that we've been having, you know, I got a lot of Japanese maples at the nursery that are not shaded, of course, and their leaves look like death warmed over. They're curled up, they're brown and all that. We don't overwater them in pots, but we do water them every day because they're in a pot above the ground. Now, the ones I have out in the back part of my nursery that nobody ever sees, that's they're kind of in the pre-adolescent stage, they're growing. They're partially shaded most of the day, and they look great. And I think, and I've seen it happen, you know, in years past, the prolonged heat eventually just kind of, they shrivel up the leaves. Now, I've got some at home that are experiencing a little bit of that, but I get in the shade. My place is in the shade by about 6 right now, and it's a little bit cooler. It's not, and I'm not on a ridge. I'm in a valley, so I get a little bit of breeze.
Yeah.
And I think it's the heat that's been cooking them. And usually when what you described to me is a sign of overwater. So
really,
yeah. And what you can do is look very closely at the ends of the stems and see if you see any tiny buds. They're not open, but those are the buds for next year. And if it has those tiny buds and the stems are still green, scratch the stem with your fingernail and see, you know, just a little bit so you can see what color is underneath the bark. And if it's green, it's okay. It's going to survive, and it'll come out next spring, you know, and do the thing for you.
Maybe. You know, the thing is, I go out and I snap the branch.
Uh-huh.
And if it cracks off, I'm sure it's dead, right?
Well, yeah, if it snaps off and it's dry, it's that branch is dead at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, go back through it down the stem until, you know, 2 or 3 places, and if you see green, you're good. And what I would do is prune off all the dry branches that snap. Just prune them off because they're not going to come back.
No, heavens no.
Yeah.
No, we know that.
Yeah.
So yeah, and this is a beautiful centerpiece of my front of my house.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's been just gorgeous, and then last fall it started drying up.
Yeah, how long has it been in?
11 years. 12
really,
years.
11 years? Jeez,
yeah.
Louise.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well.
No, I don't. I just don't get it. It's just, and like I said, the man up from me, the house up from me, he lost one of his out front.
Uh-huh.
And the lady down the way, who used to own a nursery, I guess, she lost hers.
Huh.
So, yeah, I just wonder if there was something bad going around, you know.
Not to my knowledge, because as I drive around every day, you know, it's like it's natural for me to look at all the landscaping as I'm driving by. And I haven't seen that to be the case.
Okay, and so let's just say, what if it dies? What should I plant another one, or would it be not a good idea right now?
Well, if it totally dies, you're obviously going to dig it out or cut it down, and check the bark for bugs, check the soil, see if there's any little critters in there that look abnormal and they've been eaten on the roots or something like that.
Okay.
There's always a reason for a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's been absolutely exquisite. I mean, it's just been my pride and joy out there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, here we go.
Yeah.
And I went and bought a plum tree the other day. Silly me, but it's a plum something. There's another. It's a mixed fruit.
Yeah.
And does it have to have something to? Does it have to have another plum to fertilize it, or whatever they call it?
No, not. It can be self-pollinating.
That's the word I was looking for.
And if you don't know what type of plum it is there any other plums? Are there any other plums in the neighborhood?
No.
Well, is there a name tag on it by any chance?
Well, yeah, there is. And I just threw this in because I've been meaning to get a hold of you, but I just couldn't get the number. You guys don't throw it out often enough for
me.
Well,
usually okay? I throw it out the first of the show, and I should probably throw it out a little bit more. So.
Yeah, every once in a while. So I've been waiting for months to finally get it, and I got it, so I called you today. So,
well, good.
I will get the full name on it, and then you can tell me if it needs.
Okay. And you can always call my nursery at 679-8224 and ask that same question, and whoever answers the phone can usually tell you.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Okay. Have a good, wonderful, warm afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Speaking of warm, I just checked the temp.
What?
99. You think we're going to reach the century mark?
Not if I had anything to do with it.
Well, that's a good time for a break.
Yeah,
huh?
Let's take a break. I'll let that settle.
More of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show on the other side on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Oh, welcome back. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show is the name of the program.
And I am here. I am speaking. And if you want to call us and ask a question, it's 673-4464. And I always announce it at the beginning of my show, but if you turn in a few minutes late, you're going to miss it. So I will try to remember to give the number more often, and if that had helped,
we'll stay on top of that.
We'll stay on top of that. Just write it on my forehead or something. Oh gosh, but I was talking about planting and using the B1 and making sure that you had success with whatever you were planting, and if you follow these procedures I'm talking about, your results will be seen next year in the spring. As your new trees begins to leaf out, because it's chock full of energy, it's chock full of vitamins, it's chock full of fertilizer, and
ready to roll.
I know, it's ready to go. And as an added bonus, you want to fertilize your new plants, like if you plant it this fall, you're not going to fertilize them, you're just going to let them go dormant. The new plant's been in the ground, say November, December, January, February, starting to wake up. That's when you want to plant, put some fertilizer on. Some good granular fertilizer, not the cheapo stuff for $2.98, but invest some money into a well-balanced fertilizer and granular. And like the end of February, 1st of March, where we still have some precipitation, hopefully, you fertilize around the base of the plant. Don't put any fertilizer against the stem or the trunk, but out about 6 inches, and just do a circle of fertilizer around that.
Around the outside.
Around the outside.
Gotcha.
And as the rain falls, the fertilizer begins to dissolve and go into the root system. And by the middle of April, when spring is really popping out everywhere, that fertilizer is actually down into the root zone. and that plant really gives you a good spurt. And then I usually fertilize again about, you know, first part of May, end of April, first part of May, just a little bit more. And then again in October, I hit it just so it has a little something going into the winter. And what's cool about plants, and people don't realize it, is if it's October and you fertilize, it's not going to take the whole shot of fertilizer into the system because the system is closing down. It doesn't need it, so consequently, anything that's there, the plant root system actually stores it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, they go into hibernation, their ice box is full, don't worry about it, we'll catch it in the spring. And and in spring, it's locked and loaded, ready to go. And you know,
time to move on.
Move on. Plants are not stupid. You know that. They have feelings too. but
their lives matter.
Yeah, their lives matter. Tree lives matter. And you know, the only native trees that are standing up to these dry conditions that I was talking about earlier are madrones and oaks. And both of these are very, very drought tolerant. Even though some of my madrones on my hill are losing leaves, they're not losing a lot of them, but they're probably one of the toughest trees known to known to man. They're very, very tolerant, and they have very deep root systems, both the oaks and the madrones. And over the years, we have carried a few varieties of oak in the nursery. We don't usually carry the native varieties because nobody grows them. Nobody, you know, one year a guy wanted a white oak. I don't know why he wanted a white oak, but that's what's predominantly on our slopes is California white oak. And I called half a dozen nurseries, and finally one guy says, well, why don't you call Joe Blow Nursery? I think he grows them. So I called Joe Blow Nursery, and by golly, he had them, and I went, oh, gosh, you know, east of Salem or west of Salem. It was a long way for one tree. But the homeowner said, I want that tree. I want a good, you know, and so I got it. It's probably a good six-footer, and I planted it for him. Why he wanted it, I don't know, because all around him the hills were filled with white oaks. But they're a very, very tough tree, and but the kinds of oaks that we carry are like pin oak, northern red oak, those kinds of things, because those are grown by nurseries. Those are kind of standard nursery stock, and whereas the California black oak or the Oregon white oak, they're all native. They're all around us, and so nobody thinks to grow those. But like I say, there are a few nurseries out and about that will do that. And if you can find them, good. But what I like about them is that they're tough. They don't require after the first year. They don't require any care. Their roots are down. Their roots are growing. I've got some. I got a mile of dirt road into my place, gravel road. And on the side of it, there's a couple of oak trees. And I've watched them over the years. And they're both black oak. And I've watched them over the years. And they were kind of ugly and stringy. And you know, they're kind of grown, but not. And they're no care at all. Zero, not a bit of water, not anything, except dust from the road. And pruned them up a little bit. And where you get the suckers off and let the top grow. And now they're about, 12 feet tall maybe, and they got a nice rounded top, and they look good. They look like a nice tree, but they only grow maybe 6-8 inches a year. That's it. Maybe a good wet year, they might grow a foot, but that's all she wrote.
It takes forever.
Yeah, it takes forever, and that's probably another reason why we don't handle them in the nursery industry, because everybody wants, I want a fast growing tree. I want, 90% of the time, I want a fast growing shade tree. Okay, well, the California black oak, white oak, or the California
black, it's not
the tree you want. Not the tree you want, no sir. But they're all hardy, and they, usually they have the northern red oak and the pin oak. Have a brilliant fall color. That's another thing that our native oaks don't have. Their color goes from kind of green to yellow to brown, and so they're not New England type super duper red orange kind of trees. Whereas the pin oak and the northern red oak are very, very attractive in that way. Now the pin oak is really special because it turns a real deep scarlet red, and the leaves stay on the tree till next spring. And but about December, those beautiful red, deep orange leaves on the pin oak, they turn to brown.
Uh-oh.
I mean, they're flat brown. And but the leaves are still on the tree. And then when the new buds begin to push in the spring, that's when all the brown leaves fall off. And you got, voila, you got, I wouldn't call them an evergreen, but they sure hold their leaves for a long, long time.
It's like the old leaf protects the young one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that could be. But both of them are faster growing. Both of them do really pretty, really good job, and they're nicely shaped and super hardy. And they would do well in a yard. They would do. You have to keep in mind, eventually they might be 50, 60 feet, but probably not in your lifetime. But you never know. So you don't want to plant them next to the house. You don't want to plant them next to the driveway or over your car or something like that. Put them in a back corner. If you have a small yard, don't even try it. But if you got an oversized yard, hey, they work really well that way. And like I said, unfortunately, white oak and black oak, they're hard to find because, like, there's not much demand. And same story with the Madrone. One lady I did a landscape for up at the Sutherland Golf Course a few years ago, she wanted a Madrone in her front yard. And I thought, oh, geez Louise, where in the heck am I going to get a Madrone? Again, on the phone, call 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 nurseries and, no, we don't do Madrone. We don't do it. And then finally one guy says, yeah, there's a guy over in, you know, Podunkville. He grows Madrones. So I called him and he said, oh, yeah, I got him. And for a 4-foot, I think, or a 5-foot Madrone tree, cost me over $100 wholesale, over $100.
Wow.
And I told the lady, hey, this is an expensive tree, so I don't care what it costs. I want it. Okay. So I drove up there and picked it up and planted it in her yard. And that's been, 3 years, maybe 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I was just visiting her last week. She wanted some more work done. And she said, wait till you see the Madrone. It's absolutely outrageous. You know, okay. And I pulled in to the cul-de-sac there. And it was gorgeous.
It
really had grown well. And,
nice.
You know, nice red trunk, red bark, not red, but like a burnt red.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was just as healthy as a horse.
Nice.
Growing there. It was the only Madrone in the Sutherland Golf Course.
You know, so look for it.
Yeah, they got a lot of trees up there, but she's the only one who's got a Madrone. Yeah. So
they make good firewood, too.
Oh, the best in the world. Yes.
But
are.
I wouldn't advocate that.
Yeah. But again, that's a tree there's not much call for. There's not much demand for
in the
landscape industry. So they're like I say, very, very hard to find and locate. And if you pump too much water in them, they'll die in a hot minute. But if you put them in a dry gravel bed, they grow like crazy.
They love it.
Yeah, they love it. Oh, so anyway. I know I keep harping on overwatering, but with the continued heat and no rain, it is imperative to kind of pay attention to your trees and shrubs, that are especially the newly planted ones. Like if you planted some this last spring, pay attention to them. Do not go out there and water them every day. That will kill them. Do you hear me? That will kill them. But once a week, a good soak would be probably ample until the weather breaks. We get into a cooler daytime temp, and we get a little bit of rain. And when that happens, hey, you're free to leave them alone. You don't have to go out there and do a thing to them. But, you know, like today, 99, and tomorrow, 90, whatever, and the 101 and all that kind of garbage. Jeez Louise. We planted a landscape this morning, and you know, like I said, we pre-soaked the plants while they were in the pots. We pre-soaked the holes, and then when we covered them up, put the soil back in, we soaked them again with B1. B1. So when I leave here, I'm going to do a drive-by and make sure.
See how they're doing.
Yeah, see how they're doing, you know. Gosh, I'll tell you. But when you do water, water deeply, but like I say, not often. And another problem I've been seeing is brown patches in lawns.
Uh-oh.
And these brown spots, they start small, but they grow over time, like in days they grow. And clients have called and described their lawn brown spots and assure me that they're watering regularly and at least every other day for 30 minutes. And, you know, I got to believe them because they're telling me that or more. And there's been no dogs using their lawns as watering holes or
whatever.
Lavatories.
Yes.
So the brown spots aren't from urination or anything like that. So my first thought is grubs. Haha, grubs. Mm-hmm. These are small, one-inch segmented worms that eat grass roots, and no roots grass dies, period. And they start out small. And you see, you know, almost a round circular, almost perfect round circle of dry grass, dead grass, and in the middle of this big green lawn, you go, what the heck is that? You think four dogs were there last night doing their thing. But
having a good time.
Yeah, but the grubs are in there, and they're eating the roots. They're eating roots. That's where they get their food from. I mean, that's what they do. And but I always confirm that, and it's like it's there's processes to eliminate this, but when I go to somebody's house, they say, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. The first thing I do is I'll take a shovel and dig out a little shovel full of soil.
Yeah.
And the grubs are there. I mean, they're, like I say, they're about an inch long. They're segmented. They got little tiny legs.
So you can actually see them.
Oh, yeah. And their legs are wiggling and everything. So I pop a few in my mouth and walk to the other side.
Off you go. A little protein for the day.
Pure protein, fresh, natural, and organic, right from your lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we have another commercial break?
We do.
Okay.
This is the last one.
I'll finish it.
More with the grubs on the other side.
Yeah. Stay tuned.
News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It certainly is. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, News Radio 1240 KQEN. We had a caller trying to call in, but keep trying. We'll get you.
Yeah, we were on a commercial thing, and, you know, and of course Dale hit all the wrong buttons and messed the whole call up. So please call us back if you have a question. We're glad to talk to you.
I was trying to say, hold on, please. I'll be right with you. And, that didn't work.
Hit number two instead of number one.
Oh, yep. Well. That's story of my life.
Oh, well. I couldn't even do that, so don't worry. I wouldn't even know how to disconnect them. Oh gosh! But I've been talking about grubs and what you do and how to treat them and make your lawn whole again, and there is a process that you can do. There's several processes, but I'll tell you the quickest way to eliminate these guys. There is a chemical granular chemical out there called Seven. And it's spelled S-E-V-I-N, Seven. And you can find it at the co-op and probably at Lowe's and Home Depot and, you know, maybe even Freddy's, I'm not sure. But I know you can find it at those other three places. And that, and you should apply all the stuff according to package directions. Don't think if I put in, you know, a double shot, it's going to work better. With something like Seven, it's not like the B1 I've been speaking about earlier, but Seven is a granular insecticide that is easily and quickly applied with a handheld spreader or a wheeled spreader that you push. Same thing you fertilize with, and you put it in, and you open up the orifice to the you know, the small size to start, and you actually, if it's a handheld one, you're cranking, and you're seeing how much is actually coming out. And if you need more, you put it up to the next notch, and more comes out as you're cranking, but you might be walking a little bit faster, too, to compensate for any over insecticide use. But it's very quick, and after the application, you water to take the 7 down into the root zone, and then I apply 7 at least twice, and usually the second time is about 10 days from my first application. So it does work. The grubs will get sick, and they'll come to the surface to try to escape, and they'll die. And voila, there's nothing eating your roots again for a while. Now, if the lawn is thick, and I've talked about this in the past, if the lawn is thick, you're going to have to thatch it, which is, taking and removing the old dead grass that your mower didn't suck up after you mowed. And you remove that thatch. You can remove it manually with a rake, with a thatching rake, which doesn't look like a garden rake. It actually has like knives on it that you slice through the grass, and it brings all that dead stuff to the surface, and you got to rake all that out, and once it's removed, the pesticide can actually penetrate the soil and get down into the grubs. If the thatch is too thick, you put on the 7 and you water it, but very little of it can get down into the roots and kill the grubs that are destroying your lawn. And once you have killed the root eaters, you can reseed the bare spots and start a fertilizing program on a consistent basis, like every 2 months during the growing season. And you may have to repeat the process every year if your neighbor's lawns are infected, because what the grubs will do, they'll hang out where the eating is good, and if they start to run out, they'll somehow get next door and start working on the neighbor's lawn, and it's not something that just stays in one place. I visited a client this week up the block from where we were working, and she had very large brown patches, and she thought it was her sprinkler system not operating correctly, and wanted me to give her a bid on a new sprinkler. And I thought, that might be grubs too. And she said, my neighbor had grubs over next door, and there was only a driveway separating her yard from his yard. And she said he treated his last year, or maybe last fall. And it was green. It was lush. It looked good. There were no bare spots. There were no brown spots. And I says, well, I think that's what you have, because the more the grubs, the longer the grubs are in there eating, the patterns get a little irregular. In other words, they don't stay round and perfect, but they kind of spread out, and they'll go around and they'll eat where the eating is good. That's what happens. So if you do this and you've got your lawn in good shape, and you look across the fence and your neighbor's lawns are infected, you might talk to them about it and say, hey, I had that same thing last year, and I did this, and if you want to save your lawn, that's what you're going to have to do. And if you don't save your lawn, they're going to come over and get my lawn again. So, do it in a nice way. Hand them a cup of coffee or a glass of iced tea when you're talking. Be neighborly about about the whole thing.
They don't discriminate.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Wow. Is that it?
That's it already.
Oh, man, I got 2 more pages of notes. But I'll talk about more critters next week that like to chomp on your lawn.
All right.
Thank you for listening.
Where are you located in Winston, Mike?
Oh, we're south of Winston, about a half a mile on Highway 99 going towards Roseburg Forest Products. And look for the big green roofs, and you'll see our nursery. And we'd love to have you. We'd love to see you.
All right. Afternoon report coming up. It's 5 o'clock.